Okay, thank you. So I'd like first to thank the organizers for inviting me to come here and for giving me this opportunity to talk to you. Having been in this country for 15 years and having become a citizen, coming back to the US is also a little bit of homecoming. Of course, we were insofar lucky this time that we arrived in New York on September 10th. Just to wake up the next day to all these horrible events. So, but let me come to physics. This is work which I like to present, which has been done in collaboration with Pascal Chedraski. He has made a thesis in Geneva. We received some very important help during this time by Vadim Ponomarenko, who is now in Stony Brook, and most recently I've also worked with Kirill Nagaev. Now, motivation to look at this question came out of experimental work a few years ago concerned this weak localization. In weak localization, the defacing due to Nyquist noise gives a theoretical result where the defacing time diverges as the temperature goes to zero. However, in many experiments, it is seen that this time, instead of exhibiting this divergence, actually saturates. And a few years ago, in a paper by Mohanty, Yaravala, and Webb, it was suggested that this had something to do with quantum fluctuations, with zero-point fluctuations. Now, there was also in the following some theoretical work in this direction, but the reaction of the mesoscopic community was rather furious, and there was a simple argument which states that this cannot happen, such a saturation cannot be due to quantum Nyquist noise. And this key argument goes something like that. If you have a system in the bath and you are at zero temperature and both of them are in the ground state, then neither the system can give energy to the bath, nor can the bath give energy to the system. So there is just no possibility for any defacing or decoherence event in the zero temperature limit. This argument, however, rests on the fact that we can write the ground state as a product state. Now that we have a separate ground state from the system and from the bath. There are clearly, however, a number of physical systems in which it makes no sense to talk about the ground state of the system itself or of the bath itself, but where we should look at the ground state as characterizing both the system plus coupling energy plus bath energy. So what I would like to do is to look at the system in which this is the case and ask about the coherence properties of such a system in the zero temperature limit. There's another important difference between the work that I'm going to show you and this. Here we have a transport experiment, so we are so to say testing an excited state. And in the following, I'm really just going to talk or focusing on the ground state. Of course, we all think that the global ground state is coherent at zero temperature, but after all, what we are interested in is not this global ground state, but only the properties of the small system. So I think there the question comes up, even in the ground state, what are the coherence properties of my small system?
One thing, Marcus, yeah. You can't actually involve nucleus to be facing.
Yes.
Are you going to specify this?
This is Nyquist noise the original theory by Altshuler, Aronoff, and Khmelnytsky considered the effect of potential of equilibrium potential fluctuations.
Marcus, we also know that for linear transport, the transport coefficient is given exactly in terms of a equilibrium correlation function.
Yes.
So you can make a calculation in equilibrium and get the result for linear transport, only linear transport.
Yes, these two things are, of course, not unrelated. No, but I think to get something interesting, I draw a focus on such a system. Now, what is the problem we have looked at and which I like to discuss in some detail? It's a very simple toy problem which we are going to investigate. It's we look at a quantum dot here and with some tunneling to the leads, but now we take the leads and we close them back to themselves so that we have a ring structure here. And we can then suppose that time reversal symmetry is broken by an Aronoff Bohm flux. And as we know, such a loop exhibits in its ground state a persistent current. And so we have here already one interesting feature which we can look at. Now the bath here is an external circuit, and coupling to this external circuit is capacitive. And in the external circuit, we have an impedance. And to be specific for the rest of my talk, I take this external impedance just to be an ohmic resistor. And I will also follow here the literature on macroscopic quantum tunneling, where such an external resistor is replaced by a transmission line. And an object here attached to the end of the transmission line sees effectively an impedance which is that of a resistor. And now I like this model also because it makes physically very obvious the origin of irreversibility which comes from the bath. Namely, all the waves here, for instance, the charge field can be decomposed into a left-moving field or a right-moving field. And irreversibility comes from the fact that what is coming in, what is going out here, does not specify what is coming in. It is this break, the fact that we don't specify what goes out, does not specify what is coming in, which generates irreversibility. The velocity of these fields is determined in terms of parameters of these transmission lines, L and C, and the impedance is the square root of the ratio of the two. Now, also this problem which I've mentioned first, there are some features which are very closely related to the problem where we replace here at the end of the transmission line, where our system is just a harmonic oscillator. And I like to discuss this in a little bit more detail. I call this type of models where you attach here a transmission line or an elastic string. I call them, according to a physicist Lamp, who more than 100 years ago introduced such models to understand the notion of radiation damping, which came up around the turn of the last century. So now let me look first at this simple problem. Our system is now just that of an LC oscillator, L and C. So now it's we can take the continuum limit, and we can end up with two equations for the charge here of the oscillator. R is this resistance of the simulated by the transmission line, and here appears a term which is the noise term, and this is supplied uniquely by the waves which are coming in. The whole for x equal bigger than zero, this transmission line in the continuum limit is just described by a wave equation. And there is, of course, a boundary condition at x equals zero, namely this charge on the oscillator must be equal to the charge of the left and right movers at x equals zero. That's the boundary condition. Now, this is easy to quantize, and it's also in this connection not so widely known that one can view this as a scattering problem. If A of omega here is the annihilation operator of the oscillator, AL omega of a left mover and AR of a right mover, then I have this connection here from this boundary condition. One can solve this in terms of the right movers, the outgoing waves, in terms of the incoming waves. That determines an S matrix. This S matrix, of course, is just determined by a phase, since everything that comes in has to be reflected. And near resonance, one finds such a Breit-Wigner delay with a friction constant eta here, which is again determined with this the resistance of the transmission line and L the inductance of the oscillator. So, now, of course, this is just a harmonic problem, and therefore there are probably 1 million ways of solving it and looking at it. So, some results, of course, you find in every textbook. For instance, the mean charge, the expectation value of the mean squared charge, now depends on the properties of the transmission line or of your external circuit. This eta contains the resistance. And similarly, the mean squared current fluctuations.
Q is the charge of the
capacitor.
Of the last link, of the left-most link.
Of my capacitor here. No, that's my system. And similarly for the current, and this is just the leading order. So these are the results for very small damping. And you see that the mean square current fluctuations are enhanced. These two effects do not compensate one another. But in the ground state now, this oscillator has, in addition to the h bar omega 1 half, it has some logarithmic correction. But more interesting, in view of the key argument which I've given you before, which says that at zero temperature you cannot exchange energy, if we now look at the fluctuations of the energy of this oscillator, at its mean squared fluctuations, it's not zero, but it has also a value which is determined by this logarithmic term and the friction constant. So these results here are calculated in the continuum limit of the transmission line, and this is the by cutoff omega c. So
what is omega c?
Omega c is a cutoff. Now we first take the continuum limit, and then we introduce a high frequency cutoff. It's like a Debye frequency, similar for phonons. You just cut the spectrum off. If you would not cut it off, then already the mean energy would diverge. So, and I have here a little figure for this. This shows now here I use the results valid also at large friction constants. This shows the broken line, shows the mean energy, and the full line here the fluctuations of the energy. Now let me come back to our model and specify it in a little bit more detail. And the first thing which I would like to do is to specify this model, assuming that now we just talk about the situation where we apply a constant voltage between here and here. So we have a gated ring.
So far you work this lamp, take care of this C external.
Yeah.
That's what you've done so far.
I've discussed this transmission line, and I've discussed the case when the system is a harmonic oscillator. Mm-hmm. So, but now I'd like to just specify this system here with a constant voltage applied between here and here. And
omega c only came about because you went to the continuum limit for this reading.
That's right. If we have done that too. If you keep the chain finite, discrete, then of course you don't need to have such a cutoff.
So then LT and C for the bar entirely determine. Sorry. External determines the. Z-external is the only thing that determines this.
Well, Z-external and the cutoff frequency determine your results. Okay, so forget for a moment about this external resistor and just assume that you can regulate your voltage across this loop, and this will lead to something which is also already interesting and which we can call Coulomb blockade persistent current peaks. It's a Coulomb blockade in the persistent current, and the way we proceed to specify this system is very similar to the way one goes about if one discusses Coulomb blockade. All the parts here are now interacting, and this interaction is described in terms of capacitances. So we have between the dot and the lead, we have CR and CL. And to the external circuit, we have C1 and C2. And we assume that we have to introduce just two potentials, one for the dot and here one for the arm. That's, of course, already a limitation. But then if you go through the algebra, you find that there is a Coulomb energy, and it has the form you all know from the Coulomb blockade. It's 1/2 C. This C here is now the addition of the external capacitances, which are given here, and the internal capacitances, which are given here. And this is the charge on the dot. Q naught is the charge which I can regulate by applying a voltage difference between here and here. And then there is a term quadratic in the voltage.
You need also to have tunneling barriers, right?
This is now just the electrostatics. Now, in addition to the electrostatic energy, of course, now we have to worry about kinetic energy. You go slightly ahead of me. So that is what we do next. to complete the model now, we have to add the kinetic energies. And to make my life simple, I want to consider here the limit that the tunneling rates, the tunneling amplitudes, are very small. So I want to stay strictly in a Coulomb blockade picture. There are a number of works in this which for such closed geometry also discuss Kondo effects. But I will come to the Kondo effect later. At this stage, I assume I have just Coulomb blockade physics. So we have a set of energy levels which are called EAM in the arm, and a set of energy levels in the dot. And now if we assume that these tunneling rates, tunneling amplitudes are small, and that the Coulomb energy is sufficiently big, we can essentially limit ourselves to just a two-state system, in which we have on this dot either n charges or n plus one charges. So the whole Hilbert space is shrunk to looking only at the topmost electron. And the Hamiltonian then has this form. E zero here is an energy which comes from all the field levels. Epsilon here measures your distance to resonance. In such a Coulomb blockade picture, you can have transport only if the free energy of having n charges there and n plus one charges are equal. That determines epsilon equals zero. So this is just the difference between three energies. And now the third and very important ingredient now is the effective tunnel matrix element. And this tunnel, effective tunnel amplitude, now depends on these tunnel amplitudes TL and TR. And it also depends on the Aronoff Bohm flux through this ring. And it depends on how many charges you have in your system, whether you have n plus, whether n plus n is odd or even. That gives you two cases. This is also a discussion for spinless electrons. This spin is slightly more complicated, but again, it adds to what I want to do. It adds nothing of importance. So then the variation of the free energy, the important part.
Can you say a word why for spinless electrons it's important whether you are odd or even?
You will see that this gives us either paramagnetic or diamagnetic persistent current peaks. So the free energy, the relevant part of it is then just the square root of this distance to resonance and the tunneling amplitude squared.
I'm sorry to press you on that.
Yes.
Okay. Is this even odd? Due to the fact that you assume that the geometry around is one-dimensional, and therefore...
Well, it is always, of course, one-dimensional, you know, if I fill up my levels. But due to this, now I effectively, since I've assumed very small amplitudes, I do have the assumption that I interact only with one level here and one level here.
What I'm asking is not about this, but the odd-even thing, is due to the fact that the ring around.
Yes.
Is assumed to be one dimensional, and therefore you have curvatures which are positive, negative, and so on.
Yes, it's only how we did the calculation.
So this is the odd even.
Yes, it's the odd even effect, like we know it from persistent currents. This model has then a persistent current, which is the free energy derivative of this. I also like to mention that even now in the ground state, now the charge on the dot is not sharp, but it's mean squared fluctuations have such a Lorentzian-like behavior. And also the persistent current, even without a bath, is in general not sharp, but even up resonance has fluctuations.
I don't understand what you're saying. The nature of this problem in the following sense. For the quantum, there is more or less one electron point.
Yes.
But what about this ring? Where are the electrons sitting and what are they doing? I don't understand how they come in here.
In a sense, this is very similar to we have a set of levels in outside, and we have a set of maybe larger spaced levels inside. And there is a coupling here between what will happen is that, let's say, the topmost level here gets emptied when I put one electron in the dot. So it's this connection which matters near a resonance.
You reduce it effectively to one more electron problem.
That's right. This is effectively reduced to one electron problem.
I think also, but having said, you have put the flux dependence in the hopping element that goes through the link.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. You could have put any all over.
Well, if I suppose these energies here of the uncoupled system, no, it's these ones which are called EAM, and these ones are called EDM. No, so you suppose you know these energies, and then of course your flux will appear in the tunnel element. So how does this look like? So for the geometry, which is of interest here, with this quantum dot, it's this lower figure which applies, and what you get then is the persistent current as a function of the polarization charge induced by this voltage looks something like this. We have a large persistent current whenever we are at resonance, and very little current if we are away from these Coulomb blockade peaks. We compare this also with Lange's diagonalization as soon as you make these transmission probabilities, transmission amplitudes here small, Lange just gives you a very good, it shows you that this two-state approximation becomes very good. So that's the system. Now, what I'm going to discuss next is, what we will discuss is when I couple here a bath to it, and I will put myself here at the resonance of one of these peaks of the persistent current, and we'll see what happens to it as we increase the this coupling to the bath. But just maybe to summarize, the system which we have is a two-level system, like they are now fashionable in the discussion of qubits. And it's essentially nothing but an avoided level crossing problem. Now there's one point which I like to make before going on. It's very important in this discussion to distinguish two cases. Namely, it can the case where your Hamiltonian of your system commutes with the total Hamiltonian, Then this brings me back to the case where indeed in the ground state, the ground state is immune to the fluctuations of the bath. Then I can write the ground state as a product state of bath and system. Or the case where I have, which I have already discussed for the harmonic oscillator, when H0 does not commute with the total Hamiltonian. Now, this problem which we have here, the coupling is proportional to sigma z, and therefore bath and H0 does not commute with the total Hamiltonian. So this is a case B. We can, however, get case A if we, for a moment, put the tunneling element to zero. You can also think of applying a voltage pulse and putting the system far from this crossing point. So then this tunneling plays no role, and you have just a simple system where you have H naught is proportional to sigma z, and also H coupling is proportional to sigma z.
I'm a bit confused of what you call system and bath. The system is the ring with the dot.
And
the coupling, if it is, and
sorry,
and the coupling also is part of the system.
The well, I
the tunneling barriers.
All this is my system.
Right.
And but the external resistor is my bath.
But you focus attention on the quantum dot actually.
That's well, the quantum dot just helps me to make this a two-level problem, no?
But sigma zero, the tunneling thing, is something that belongs to your system. Doesn't have anything to do with the bath.
No.
Sigma zero is the coupling of the dot to the ring.
Yeah, that's that gives you the coupling to the bath. Now this delta epsilon here is proportional to the voltage which is applied across here.
Mm-hmm.
So, but let me just spend one more moment to discuss this exceptional case. No, where I have no tunneling. It's useful because this is a simple toy problem which is actually exactly solvable. And of course, as I mentioned already, in this case, to look at the ground state makes is of little interest since the ground state is immune to the bath. But of course, what we can look at is we can make a superposition of the ground state and of the excited state. Now this is insofar interesting as since H0 commutes with the total Hamiltonian, energy is strictly conserved. So there is in this case no energy exchange. Nevertheless, if you study this, you find that the phase here, that it's time evolution, it's mean squared deviation from some initial value, that this grows at long times, it grows logarithmically. So, or you can also put this in some other fashion, you can say that the off-diagonal elements of the density matrix decay, and they decay like 1 over t to the power 2 alpha. Alpha here is now an effective coupling constant. It's so here, this is nothing but the effect of the quantum noise on such a superposition. And so clearly we are here this is not the ground state, here we have an excited state, but it does not decohere by de-exciting and exciting the reservoir. It just, the decoherence here is just a result of the fact that the system and the bath are entangled and that the bath acts in an irreversible way on the system. But it's very weak in the sense that the decay here is not exponential. And I think this is probably generic, that whenever we have a system where H0 and the total Hamiltonian commute, that we can only in the zero temperature limit find something which of the bath which goes like such a power law. But now I'd like to come back to the case which is of interest to us, where tunneling is important. And the model we obtain then, if we couple now this transmission line to our two-state system, this in the literature is called the it's called the spin boson model. And this spin boson model is has a low energy properties, which are equivalent to the anisotropic condo model and also to the resonant level model. So now what we do is we use solutions for this anisotropic condo model. The BT-Ansatz solution is known for a certain range of coupling constant. And also you can do a perturbation theory if you are far from resonance or if you consider the very strong coupling case. And these two things are sufficient for us to determine the persistent current and its fluctuations. So I will not show you anything of the algebra, but I'd like only to show you briefly the results. So, and here I've chosen now the case where both in the capacitances and in the tunneling amplitudes I'm symmetric. And I'm looking at the persistent current at the peak of a resonance. So it's normalized to one as a function here of this coupling constant. And what you see is that this mean persistent current decreases very rapidly, and for alpha bigger than one, it is very small. At the same time, when you look at the fluctuations, then you see that the fluctuations initially at resonance without the bath, they are zero, that the ground state is sharp, is a pure state. But now when you switch on the coupling, the fluctuations increase. These are the relative fluctuations. So it's the mean squared current fluctuations divided by the average. If I would draw the absolute fluctuations, they would go up and then go down again. So in the round here, they would be maximal.
They are 100% or 100 times the mean value at the far.
Yeah, because the mean value here, yes, goes becomes very small.
So it's 100 times the mean value.
Yes. So this is what we see here, or is a crossover from a state which is very well characterized by its mean, and it has very small fluctuations, to a state where the mean is very much smaller than its fluctuations. Now, this spin boson model is known to have a symmetry breaking transition. So, for instance, if you look at the charge, then you find that as a function of how far you are from resonance, then if you have no bath, then this is a continuous function. On the other hand, if you now switch on the bath and you increase the coupling beyond alpha equal 1, then you see that you get a discontinuous jump as you go through alpha equal 1. And so this is also sometimes discussed as a localization transition. And so originally I expected that for this model, the persistent current would actually go to 0 at 1. And that doesn't seem to happen. However, we do see in the persistent current a signature of this transition, namely similar if we look at the persistent current on as a function of how far we are from resonance. Then for small alpha, this is a smooth function. But as soon as we are beyond alpha equal 1, we have a cusp-like behavior.
Sorry, the current is finite when the deep tuning parameter is 0?
Yes, then that means I'm at resonance, I'm at the persistent current peak. That's the resonance.
And the fluctuations are also maximal if you are at the peak and maximum.
They seem also to be maximal around this region. I haven't exactly analyzed whether the maximum coincides with alpha equal 1 or not. I cannot tell you that. Okay, so now I would like to go a step further and also look not only at the persistent current, but also try to characterize the fluctuations of this system by, for instance, looking at the charge fluctuations. And there's one more result which can be easily obtained from this spin boson model. If we look at the charge correlation. So it's defined here, it's essentially the correlation of sigma z. Then in the absence of a bath, this the Fourier transform of this has two delta functions. Now it's a sharp spectrum where omega naught is the tunnel frequency. Now you switch on the bath, and for alpha equal 1/2, there is an offer limit which can be exactly solved. It's called the Toulouse limit. And what you find then for the charge fluctuations spectrum is that they are Lorentzian with a damping constant here, which is given as in terms of this tunnel element squared divided by omega c. And in addition, it's not simply Lorentzian, but its weight here has a function f of omega. And this function f of omega is shown here. Its weight, of course, is zero at zero frequency, and then shoots up and is nearly constant. And when you go further away from resonance, now this hole here widens. Okay, so these are all these results which we have obtained from using essentially known solutions to the spin boson model.
So this initial difference that you said between odd and even only affects the mean value of the persistent current?
No, no. Okay, let me be more specific. No, does it affect only the mean value or also the fluctuation? I think it only affects the mean value of the persistent current. Okay, so now I would like to change gear, and instead of using these known solutions of the beta of this anisotropic condo model, I'm going to discuss a rather pedestrian approach for the limit when the coupling to the bath is very weak. And so what we do is essentially we look at this problem from the point of view of a quantum Langevin equation. So where the external circuit has now an ohmic resistor, and in parallel to it is a noise, a current noise source. And this from the external circuit point of view, you see this system here provides an impedance which is just given by a frequency-dependent capacitance. This frequency dependence of the capacitance comes from the tunneling frequency. Gives you a singularity in the. I could also probably have called this a dielectric constant or something like this. So now we look at the Hamiltonian of the system and its coupling energy, and we consider the most general Bloch state we can think of with phases chi, theta, and phi. And inserting this into this Hamiltonian gives us a set of nonlinear equations for these phases phi, theta, and chi. Now, to close the system, we must determine what the fluctuating voltage is here across the system, and we do this in a self-consistent way. Namely, this voltage is determined by a purely classical geometrical contribution, but also it has a contribution due to the fluctuations of this charge. And of course, it has a contribution due to the noise to the noise source. And so what we have then is essentially a nonlinear problem for these phases and in terms of this noise source. So now what we do is we are interested in very small deviations from the ground state of the uncoupled system. So we determine first the phases of the ground state when the bath is switched off, and then add very small perturbations in the phases to these stationary phases of the ground state. So in other words, we linearize these equations around the ground state.
You are 10 minutes, so perhaps what I propose is if you can wind up.
Yes, I have two more transparencies okay. to go. Hmm? So this gives us a set of linear equations for these phases, and in terms of here is the noise source, and so this we can of course solve. We can determine all the spectral densities for the fluctuations of these phases, and quite amazingly, in the zero temperature limit, if I take here in addition the weak damping limit, this turns out to be exactly what you find from much more complicated methods in using path integral or interacting blip discussions for this boson problem. But the interesting thing is that the spectrum in the zero temperature limit is nothing but that of a damped harmonic oscillator. So this is the tunnel frequency, and we have here a small width added to it. So using this, we can, in the weak coupling limit, we can again calculate the persistent current, and indeed for alpha equal 1, that agrees with what we get from the BT solution. Now, In this weak coupling limit, the interesting thing is perhaps the following. We can now look at the ground state of this two-level system, and due to the fluctuations, we get some. That would be the ground state if I had no, if the bath was not coupled. But if it is coupled, I get now small corrections, and I get which come from these fluctuating phases. And similarly, I get also a projection on the excited state. Here, this is strongly time dependent, since here comes the tunneling frequency. And so I can ask then, for instance, how do these projections evolve in time? So I look at C minus, that's the projection on the ground state of the uncoupled system, minus C minus of T, absolute value squared. And we find that this goes linear in time for times which are large compared to the inverse frequency, but still small compared to the relaxation time, and that this behaves linear in temperature. On the other hand, when we look at this, how this evolves, then from the frequencies near omega naught, we find that this goes as gamma times the cotangent of beta. Beta is 1 over the temperature times h bar omega naught. And this stays finite as we go with the temperature to zero, suggesting that as soon as I couple this state to my bath, that I'm essentially losing coherence on a time scale of one over gamma, even at absolute zero temperature. Okay, so let me just maybe put up the summary. And what I was trying to say is that zero-point fluctuations can be a source of irreversibility, and therefore can produce me decoherence, even at zero temperature, of an otherwise coherent process. And we have looked at the cases where the interaction between a bath and system was purely elastic, and so this interaction can be elastic or inelastic. Then I've emphasized that the energy of a small system typically fluctuates. And for the persistent current, now I found a crossover from a pure state to a fluctuation-dominated state. And in this quantum Langevin approach, we have found phase diffusion rates which are non-zero even in the zero temperature limit. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I guess it's not a surprise that you were the first in line for a
question. Go ahead.
One question. The following, you will have to wait for another.
You always say take any number of questions and combine them to one. No questions.
We trust your policy.
So, two messages that I got from this talk was that, first of all, physical observables such as the persistent current get renormalized due to the coupling to the reservoir, which can be understood. The second is that the fluctuations of observables, which in many cases do exist in the ground state, also get modified or enhanced or renormalized due to the introduction of the reservoir. The point that I did not understand was why the presence of the modification of observables and fluctuations indicates the existence of a rephasing and decoherence in the ground state of the combined system.
Yuval, I've not used the word renormalization. I have really just avoided it because I think it's it explains really nothing. And I've shown you at least one simple case, where in a wide part of the literature, there is no question of that the fact that I have off-diagonal elements of a density matrix, which I completely suppress, that this is called decoherence. Now, how explicit do I have to be? So I can maybe not even find it at the moment. Now, I showed you for this simple case of even if I have no tunneling, no, I look at the superposition, it's there, it's an excited state, it decoheres, no, and it does this without any excitation of the bath, in the sense that you promote the state of the bath to some higher energy or whatever.
In other words, can you describe an experiment which I A, do in the absence of a copy to the environment, B, I do in the presence of copy to the environment, and the results will be different, but different in a way that cannot be attributed to just a normalization of parameters which are sort of quite understanding?
Yeah. Okay.
I guess the persistent current can be natural.
Of course, my persistent current is.
It gets modified. It's not a.
Okay, he doesn't want to.
That's right.
I show you not only a decrease now of the persistent current amplitudes. I show you also concomitant increase of the persistent current, and I have shown you phase diffusion rates. Now, okay, I don't know how to go give you a prescription with which you can go to Heibloom and say, okay, that's how you measure it. No, I cannot do that. It requires some more thinking.
But, I mean, wouldn't it be fair to say the following? I mean, coming back to the case where, as you put it, HC reproduces, okay? Then we were shown that the that nonetheless, the non-diagonal parts of the density matrix decay in time. Just because that's now if one could define an observable in terms of a transition, you would, I think, be sensitive to these non-diagonal matrix elements.
But that particular toy exercise exploited a superposition of a ground state and non-ground state.
Yes. Yes.
And there I would believe that they...
The
ground state of the combined system, is there any defect or
decoherence? Oh, that's it.
But I've shown it you also for this case, now the case with tunneling. Now I've, like in your simple one-page toy problem, I have a superposition here. I could, I can change bases and I can look at the charge qubit in my dot. So this is not your the upshot of this is that you do not have a pure ground state like it's assumed in many cases.
But if you take the ground state of the combined system and then look at the model system and introduce it to the two density matrix, it will be frozen from here. That's my conclusion of what you say.
I'm sorry, could you repeat it?
If you take the ground state of the combined system, which is what you say is T equals 0, right?
Yes.
And now you take the reduced density matrix, referring only to the model system. That reduced density matrix, that's what I conclude from what you said, is still showing phase decoherence.
That's correct, that's the point.
That is the point.
Mm. Yeah, I guess the question with Mr. Observer would be that. Well, at the beginning of the talk, you showed this wild experiment and all that, but it's clear that you don't make any
claim. I'm not making any claim about weak localization. If you are worried about weak localization, you can go home being very happy. So.
Other questions? No question? I force you to be a bit faster in that last part. Can you give the physical significance of this expectation value that this rate tau plus that doesn't go to zero as
shows that now this Bloch state, the idea is that this Bloch state is not just pointing in a direction on the Bloch sphere, but undergoes some diffusive motion. That's the idea.
Okay, well, no further questions, so let's thank Marcus.